Hi, everyone. I'm Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot, and I am very happy to be here today. I've been sort of out of town for about a week, so it's been a good break, but I am back, and I've got Tom Dongo with me today. He is a UFO veteran, a reporter from a long time ago, and just was able to connect with him, which is very exciting. I'm very excited to hear what he's up to, what he's done over the last few years, and so on. I'm going to go to my short bio here. So hold on one second. I'm going to bring this page up on the screen. This will work, I hope. You never know.
Yeah.
So, right. So it's here and. Got that on my web. This is broadcasting on Facebook Live, and then will be uploaded to Rumble and Odyssey, where we have Project Camelot channels, and then it will also be on my website, as I say. So he is a longtime resident of Sedona, Arizona, a recognized world authority of the United States. Basically, UFOs, paranormal occurrences, remote viewer, and over the course of the years has been a key lecturer at numerous national and international conferences, including the International UFO.
Yeah, Carrie, let me read something else. Somebody put that on the internet a long time ago, and I don't know how it's gone around this long, but I'll read this other one to you. This is not...
Oh, that's no problem. Go right ahead.
Yeah, this one you're reading is not up to date at all.
I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah, no, it's all right. No. So I'll read it. Tom Dongo is widely recognized as one of America's leading experts on the paranormal, UFOs and extraterrestrials. He has authored 8 books that focus on the paranormal, including his bestseller, The Revised Edition of Merging Dimensions. Merging Dimensions examines the incredibly strange paranormal activity that takes place on the Bradshaw Ranch near Sedona, Arizona. Tom Dongo has appeared on 33 national and international television shows. He has now been heard on 80 worldwide broadcast radio shows, including Coast to Coast Live and The Kevin Smith Show, with a combined total listenership of over 50 million listeners. He speaks widely and was a featured speaker at the International UFO Congress there.
All right. sorry, I somehow didn't get that one. All right. Well, like I said, it's great to have you here. And I think that people will be able to look up your work. So do you have a website where people can go? Sorry, I don't know.
Well, you know, I get so deluged with requests that I just deleted 22,000 emails. So basically, Facebook is the only way anybody can get in touch with me. And I don't use my website.
Oh, I see. Okay. I get
100 emails a day, and I can't keep up with it.
Believe me, I understand. Yeah. All right. So now that we have you here, let's start with sort of how you got into the whole UFO situation, and you know, did you have a personal sighting, etc. And then we'll go into some of your books and whatnot.
Yeah, okay, we can you know, like I say, this is the 80th time I've been on worldwide radio, so we can talk about any subject, like whatever you want. Ghosts, UFOs, remote viewing. Actually, my remote viewing has been my big thing lately. I'm kind of famous about it. So everything I try to, every time I do something, it turns into remote viewing, talk. So, but at any rate, I lived in Sedona. I live in Cottonwood now, Arizona. And when I first moved to, I had no interest in UFOs or the paranormal or extraterrestrials at all. Until I came here, and I've had some experiences where I grew up in Maine, very strange red craft sightings, you know, in the middle of the night and that sort of thing. But when I came to Sedona is a very strange place. I mean, this I've written 8 books, and most of them are about Sedona. So anyway, I got here and I right and left, I was hearing stories about UFOs and just strange happenings here. And so I started kind of poking around, and I ended up I wrote a book, and it wasn't meant to be a book. The intention was for it to be a periodical and a little magazine for a month. And a woman took it and made it a book. She was going into the book business, and it's called The Mysteries of Sodom, and it sold now about 71,000 copies, and it's still going 36 years later. So anyway, that started the whole thing, and then I got into my next book was Alien Tide, and I was running into stories right and left. I couldn't keep up with the stories, and then suddenly it just fizzled. I had I couldn't draw from no witnesses or information or whatever. So I put out the word that if anybody had any UFO stories or any encounters, and that went around, and I got flooded with stuff. And I ended up interviewing probably 300 to 400 contactees and abductees over the next couple of years. I don't think there are many people that have interviewed more people about contactees than I have. Very, very few, anyway, because I was at it for years. So anyway, that started me up, and 8 books later, I'm still going. And I'm under a non-disclosure agreement, but there's going to be there was a show down here, and it's going to be I got to be careful what I say. It's going to be on the History Channel. It's a new all series, right. And so it's going to be it's basically all about me, and they're going to it's going to be broadcast sometime in June. I'm not sure when, but it's going to be a mind blower. So anyway, I already got in trouble about this once, so I can't say too much about it, but it's all my stuff, basically. There was a camera crew here for 3 weeks, filming, so
wow.
I'm a big part of it, yeah. So anyway, that's what started it, and I, so it's been quite an adventure for sure, and I've talked about retiring a few times. I say, no, I can't do this anymore. I'm 78 years old, so I'm just going to back out of it slow. And I was talking to Jimmy Church. I was on a Jimmy Church show, and Jimmy said, no, you can't do that. You're not going to do that. And I said, yeah. So I said, oh, okay, maybe not. So it keeps me busy talking about this stuff. So I just was just at two shows here in Sedona, conferences. One was 3 days, and one was 2 days. We had a heck of a good time. So anyway, that's kind of my beginning story. Yeah.
Now, can you talk about the Bradford Ranch, since you've written books about that, and get into that a bit for my audience?
Yeah, the Bradshaw Ranch. The whole thing is going to be about the Bradshaw Ranch. The other day we were one of the speakers was he called in. It was a prearranged thing, and I think he was CIA, to tell you the truth. I didn't know who he was, and nobody would tell me, but by the stuff he said, then she said my name, Tom Dongo, and the guy gets all excited. He said he's right. Everything he writes about is true. It's accurate. And he went on and on, and this is my best-selling book here, The Merging Dimensions. And this book, on Coast to Coast, they said that this book started the whole Skinwalker Ranch thing.
Really?
Yeah, it started. They talked about it for about an hour on Coast to Coast one night, Tim Beckley and George Knapp. And they said that book started the whole thing with Skinwalker Ranch.
So okay, how did Bradshaw Ranch compare to Skinwalker? Were there differences, or was a lot of the same? Because I'm probably more familiar with Skinwalker.
Well, it's the same but different. The Skinwalker, I'm very familiar with I know Brandon Fugel. He's a great guy. He's a friend of mine. I talked to Brandon and some of the Skinwalker guys. The Bradshaw Ranch is the same but different. I think the Skinwalker Ranch has had some pretty bad things happen there. I mean, if you read, you know, the things that went the book that George Knapp wrote is pretty scary stuff. It really is. And nobody on the Bradshaw Ranch, it's really flaring up out there again, all the activity, and the government owns it. And they bought it, and the government owns it now. So it's not closed, but there's no guards out there anymore. So nothing bad ever happened on the Bradshaw Ranch. And Skinwalker, there's been a lot of bad things happen on the Skinwalker Ranch.
Okay. Okay, what drew you, or how did the whole Bradshaw Ranch story start? And what year? Do you know what year?
Yeah. I heard about all the things going on out there, and I got a letter from Linda Bradshaw one time, and she said, we know your reputation as being a researcher, and would you come out and spend some time at the ranch? And of course I was boots over the top of the hill, you know, as soon as I could get there. But she sent me some photographs, and they were orb photographs. In fact, they were the first orb photographs in the world. Linda Bradshaw and Linda Crystal in Pine Bush, New York, they started the whole orb thing around the world, and from Linda Bradshaw and the other Linda in New York, orb photography spread around the world within a couple of months. And so anyway, she showed me these orb photographs, and so I went out there, and I spent 4.5 years out there, two or three times a week. So the phenomenon that happened, I've seen countless UFOs out there, and I used to get out of there at 1 o'clock in the morning. I was tired and hungry and not in a great mood, you know, and that's usually when things happen. So I mean, I've had UFOs waiting for me many times, and I'm going, what the hell am I going to do now? I'm sitting there in my car, my van, looking at them. What am I going to do? Am I going to keep going? Because they're just sitting out there. So I said, yeah, okay, I'm going to. So they would usually disappear, and a few times they didn't. The Travel Channel did a reenactment of one of my more bizarre experiences with an alien spacecraft, and it was alien. It wasn't one of ours. I'll tell the story real quick. I was coming out of the Bradshaw Ranch, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was about 6 miles from the Bradshaw Ranch on a very bad dirt road to Sedona. So. I'd been interviewing all these abductees, and so I was very familiar with abduction scenarios, very familiar. So this white orb, it was about 50 feet across, it was all white, but the white and the orange or whatever is the propulsion system ignited, and there's a ship inside of it, usually a disc. So anyway, this thing's pacing me low through the woods, you know, and I used a bunch of four-letter words, and I said, don't even try anything with me. Don't even try it. And the thing flew off. So I said, oh, good, good. I don't have to worry about that. So I went about another mile, and here it is sitting there waiting for me. It was about 50 feet across, with multicolored flashing lights all around it, and it wasn't one of ours. And I realized then that they'd been reading my mind. They'd been listening to my mind, my thoughts all the time. So I'm sitting there in my van. I get out and I stand in front of my van. I'm looking at this thing. It's not even 100 yards away. And I said, I am just not in a mood for this kind of blank tonight. Because I was tired, you know, and hungry. And so the thing stopped. It was going this exact same speed I was, maybe 20 miles an hour, and it stopped. And it sat there for about 5 seconds, and then in a blink of an eye, it was gone over the horizon. So I'm sitting there, you know, I'm standing there in front of my van, kind of stunned, and I realized they'd been listening to my thoughts all along. So the Travel Channel did a nice reenactment of this. It was really cool. But so a million times I've wondered if I'd have kept going, it would have met me at Doe Pass, Doe Mesa. What if they were going to hurt me, they could have done it 100 times on the way. So obviously they weren't out to hurt me. But I wonder who were they? You know, what do they want? You know, so I've wondered, I really blew it. I mean, if I'd have realized what was going on, I would have kept going and met this ship. And it was not one of ours. It was for sure aliens. I've had another instance. I was doing tours and I had 6 people in my van, and an orange UFO flew over the top of my van within 20 feet. It was that close. So naturally, all my cameras were put away. So we jumped out and watched it, and it floated like a feather. It just floated. It didn't make a sound. And we watched it go down towards Cottonwood, and then it went up about 2,000 feet and turned white, brilliant white, and then came back down. You could see it going behind the trees, and I think from then it shot off. You know, you couldn't see it. So that thing was absolutely not anything this ever came from this world. It was all orange. Okay. So anyway, yeah. So.
So in terms of the encounters you've had, sounds like, you know, I lived in Sedona actually for, I think it was about 9 months to a little less than a year. This is several years ago. I lived out at near Red Rock, that area. So I don't know where Bradshaw Ranch is in respect to that. Maybe you could explain. And then let me know if what kind of beings have you come across?
Well, Yeah. Well, the Bradshaw Ranch is about 8 miles from Sedona. Well, it's actually between Cottonwood and Sedona, but it's out about 2 miles. So it's halfway between Cottonwood and Sedona, and it's out about 2 miles. It's all by itself. There's nothing around it.
Okay.
And it was bought by the, I was out there with a Japanese camera crew one time. And I was always constantly dealing with camera crews, and it said a nice big sign. It said no trespassing. Trespassers will be prosecuted to the full extent of federal law. And I said, hey, you guys make sure you get a good shot of that before we go over the fence. So the Japanese cameramen are out there taking this warning sign from the U.S. government. And then we spent quite a bit of time at the ranch, and some strange things happened, all these strange sounds and whatnot. But my main study for the last 40 years has been human extraterrestrials. That's my all the stuff I talk about, but that's been my main focus, is human extraterrestrials. And they're here, you know, the people that say, well, I just heard this story. Somebody's been spending millions of dollars somewhere. I think it's in California. So they make it a landing pad for aliens, hoping that's going to draw them. You know, I said, they're already here.
Yes.
Because I've interviewed so many people, you know, the top, you know, Wendell Stevens, Bob Dean, you name it. You know, I've talked to these guys, and they've had a lot of experiences with human extraterrestrials. And for my own research, I say there's about 17 races of different races of human extraterrestrials here, and about 125 humanoid. I've met four face to face actually. One was you know, when we were at the Alamo, you and I spoke at the Alamo in Nevada. Charles Hall was there. He talked about the tall whites.
Yes.
So other research I've done about the tall whites, they don't like us universally around. They're on the planet, and supposedly their main base is in Nevada, above Area 51.
Right.
So, but anyway, one was I was actually at Safeway Shopping Center 9 o'clock at night, and so I was on a show one night, and Augie Noss said, one of you is invisible. either you were or they were or something. Somebody was invisible because they didn't see me. And I was 5 feet from both of them. But anyway, and the people were walking by, I'm like, they didn't see them. And the tall white girl, I'm 6'2", and she was the same height as me. Her skin was as white as linen. And she had black hair, all black clothes, and she had wraparound sunglasses at 9 o'clock at night, so nobody could see her eyes. And she was standing there, totally terrified. She was just huddled like this. She couldn't move. And so the guy she was with was probably a Nordic. He was about Brad Olson size. He was about 6'5". And he had one green eye, one blue eye, like a Siberian husky. Mm-hmm. And so he came over, and neither one of them looked at me once, but I had a chance to study her. And she was not human, absolutely not human, neither was he. So he came over and just took her by the arm and gently led her off. Mm-hmm. And so she got a car, and everybody says, well, what did they buy? And I want to say bad hamburger and Twinkies and orange soda, you know, but I'm joking. So anyway, I watched them for a while. They were going down the aisle, and they take stuff off the shelves and look at it, and you could tell they were saying humans actually eat this crap and put it back. You know, I mean, you could tell they'd be looking at it like this. They'd be looking at each other. You know, this, you could tell they were saying humans actually eat this crap. So they never bought anything. She just pushed the cart around, and I had to go because it was getting late for me, so I had to leave. And they were still there when I left, but they were. I was 5 feet from that tall white woman. It was quite an experience.
Okay, now did you? Because I met Charles Hall, but his wife would not let me interview him.
Right, right.
In fact, she wouldn't let me talk to him.
Right,
even
right,
though
right.
We exchanged words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she, they say she was, or is maybe still his handler. But
yeah, yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to Charles?
Same thing. His wife dominated him, and he didn't. I couldn't get near him.
Yeah. So that was part of that deal. But all right. And have you ever, seen or met any ETs that are not human? You say you've got humanoid that you think you've met. And you might tell us what you think is the distinction between human ETs and, you know, humanoid ETs, because usually there's just humans and there's humanoids. Yeah. So how are you looking at the difference?
Well, okay, I'm called one of the world's best remote viewers. Most of the stuff I talk about these days is remote viewing.
All right.
Marine St. Germain and I taught it. We trained about, we were very good at it. Marine taught the government version of remote viewing, and I taught what she called the Tom Dongo method, and it worked perfect. So we trained about 13 people out of 50. Really caught it. It really took off. They turned out to be great remote viewers. So I use remote viewing a lot. I've told this story about 10,000 times and nobody ever gets tired of it, but I'll tell you this. So I was, I've gone out on alien spacecraft. It's easy for me. I can go into the past. I can go into the future. Remote viewing is projecting your subconscious to a place. Time and distance has no meaning. So you can go to the past, you can go to the future, you can go out into space. So anyway, I was standing next to Joe McMonagle, and at the time he was the government's top remote viewer. And I have been going out into space and visiting alien spacecraft. They were all humanoid. None of them were human. They were, you know, they had one head, you know, two arms, two legs, humanoid. And most of these beings are probably around a million years in advance of us. I mean, we're cucumbers compared to them. They have a really low opinion of us. So anyway, I was doing that. I was going out because there are many alien spacecraft in orbit or they're on trade routes. You know, I talk about this and it sounds so crazy sometimes, and I'll tell people, well, prove me wrong. If you prove me wrong, that's the end of it. everything I say, I can prove somehow. There's some kind of basis, some kind of black and white research. So anyway, Joe McMonagle was standing right next to me, and he said, you know, me and all the government remote viewers, and I know a number of government remote viewers. I've taught them my technique. So Joe, he's telling this story about he was out in the space, and when you get near an alien spacecraft out there, if you get a bad feeling about it, stay away quick. Go away quick, because they don't fool around. Or if you get a friendly feeling about it, if you get closer and closer and closer, and it feels kind of homey and kind of friendly, well, just go into it. And remote viewing, you just drift through the walls, and I've done it a bunch of times, and they can see you instantly. They'll look up and they say, "Oh, another human, another damn human." So anyway, Joe was he got threatened, they warned him, stay away. You know, we don't want you any closer. So he went onto the ship. So what do? They grabbed him and put him in a glass cage and wouldn't let him go. Huh. And he did two terms in Vietnam. He got shot up pretty bad. He said that was as terrifying as any of his Vietnam experiences. So I'm going, well, you know, I'm thinking, well, I'm not crazy after all. I'm not insane. There's a lot of stuff I've done. I've got to be insane, I thought. So they finally let him go, and I thought, what a fool! I mean, what I was thinking, you know, what a mistake for an established remote viewer like him could make, total mistake. So anyway, it's not hard to do, really. There's so many. They're like a million miles out in orbit around the Earth. They're not real close, but it's not hard. It really isn't. So. Anyway, I've done a lot of crazy stuff like that. So when I was on one of these ships, I saw this guy. He was a humanoid. He was not human at all. And I said, "Hey, would you mind if I probed your mind, you know, just for the heck of it, you know, see what, you know, the difference between you and me?" And he kind of said, "Yeah, go ahead, have at it." So I could only penetrate his mind about 10%, but it was enough to know that they are so far advanced from us, we don't have the intellect to comprehend how intelligent they are. We just don't. I don't. But they're so far ahead of us, and their minds are so powerful, because they don't use the hands. They're using their minds to create things, move things, or whatever. So anyway, that's quite an experience, because I could only penetrate his mind about 10 degrees or 10%, a little bit, you know. And at the time, I was very good at reading people's minds and telling them their whole life, you know, in 5 seconds. But that's as good as I could get with that guy.
All right. Now, in terms of the humanoid versus the reptilian, have you ever come across the reptilians?
You know, I have a lot of. I'm going to disagree that any of the aliens are our enemies. Even the reptilians. All the remote viewing I've done, I've never found any kind of real evidence that they're our enemies. One time I was remote viewing. I wanted to go and find the worst of the worst, the ones everybody calls the bad guys. You know, the black hats. And I found them. There were about 8 of them, and I could tell they were thinking, "Should we kill him?" But because you have the, you know, the cojones to look for them, they honor that. They leave you alone. You know, I did a talk the other day to a large group of people, and you know, I can tell how powerful humans are. I mean, you know, I made the joke that we're a bunch of cheeseburgers waiting, hanging around, just waiting to be eaten. And that's, to me, that's about it, because we're not using the abilities we have. I mean, we're born with power. Well, our minds are very, very powerful, because I can see it, but hardly anybody's using it. They're, you know, fear, religion or whatever is keeping them from developing this. And so I've been, the last few years, I've done everything I could to promote remote viewing. And these people that are charging $5,000 a head, it's not fair. I give it away whenever I can. And there have been some shows I've been on where there have been 2 or 3 million listeners, and I've tried to train 2 or 3 million people how to do it. And so nobody's ever gotten back to me, but I gave it my best shot because I wanted, if people could see what I see and what I know from remote viewing, you know, this world would be a different place in days.
Yes, I agree. Well, I do remote viewing as well, and it works fine.
Sure.
And I think that there is a lot of knowledge to be gained there. So it's great to hear that you've gone far down that road. Now, there are a lot of various species out there, as you know. There's also the grays. Have you been dealing with the grays over the years? And can you tell when you're approached by a ship who it belongs to? Are you able to do that?
You know, I really haven't been concerned much about that. The Dracos, the Reptilians, the, you know, whatever. It's just the fact that they're aliens is mostly what I've been interested in. I'm agree with some of the top researchers that no aliens are our enemies, but there's something else out there. I just recently started telling this story, and I reluctantly talked about this, but the missing 400 Pleiades. I've tried. There's been about 4,000 people disappear in national parks around the world. It's not just this country.
Oh yeah, so, I think it's actually larger than that. But go ahead.
Yeah. Probably is. Probably much larger than that. So I would get, you know, the people would be walking along, and somebody would be in front of them, and just blink, they'd be gone. So in one case, there was a 5-year-old boy, and I knew he was going to disappear. So I got behind him, and I followed him. And somebody on that show asked, "Did you go up or did you go down?" And I said, "That's a good question. It was up very fast every time." But then what happens is, remote viewing, you're going along real fast, and you hit a block. It's a wall. And I was about 20 years ago, I was in Denver, and General Stubblebine had the government's best remote viewers there. And he said, "None of us can get past that block." And I wanted to jump up and down and wave my hand. I said, I want to say I can do it, but I kept my mouth shut. And it's an actual block. So I got blocked, but when David Pleiades' book, The Missing 400, he told exactly where somebody disappeared and what they looked like. So I was able to find the spot and trace it from there. And I hate to say this, but every single one of those people are dead. They're all dead. Anyway, so
I'm not sure where you come to the conclusion they're not our enemies, but then you come
across
stuff like that. Yeah. So the same thing with McMonagall. If they captured him, they put him in a container. Yeah. In other words, there are some what we call negatively oriented ETs out there, some that don't have our best interests at heart, as far as I'm concerned. But and I think the military is very well aware of this.
Yeah.
I do think that there is a way that you can approach even the negative ETs in sort of a non-combatant stance. Yeah. To where they may leave you alone, but if they decide you're prey, if they decide they want to, because they do feed on our glandular structures and the orgone and so on. Yeah. So there's no doubt about that. I assume you know that, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, what about Dulce? Have you ever gotten into investigating Dulce at all?
You know, some things I can't penetrate, and Dulce is one. I need to go back and finish that other story. I was following this guy that disappeared, and they never found him again. But I suddenly got blocked. Somebody slammed on my brakes, and I heard this voice that this is as far as you go. You're going to go. So I have I'm with Charles Fort in 1920. We are somebody's herd of cattle. I agree with that. So anyway, I'm standing there looking at this. It's an actual block. It's a wall. And I'm looking at it because I said, should I sneak around it? And then the voice said, "Don't even try it." So who, what is on the other side of that wall, and what is it that they don't want us to see? That bothers me a lot.
You know? Are you aware of the AI component?
Yes. Yeah.
Running basically the reptilians and a lot of the races out there. Have you encountered the AI? Because the block is most likely coming from the AI.
Yeah.
So how far have you gone with understanding and penetrating and under, you know, the AI? And because we have visiting AIs as well.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you're familiar with my work, but
no,
I have evidence to that effect.
Yeah.
So what's your experience with AI?
Well, Dan Block is a friend of mine. He teaches about in universities about artificial intelligence. And I think, you know, somebody said on the internet the other day, what if an alien race species is coming? Because artificial intelligence here now is sentient. It has consciousness. These computers on our planet have developed a consciousness. They're thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're thinking beings now. But he said, what if an alien race is coming from outer space and they try to contact us and they contact artificial intelligence instead of us humans? That's an interesting thought. So anyway, that's something that bothers me a lot, how far people, you know, I've been talking to hundreds and hundreds of people in audiences, and I said, who knows what artificial intelligence is? And maybe a third of them will raise their hands. Or what is remote viewing? So that means the others have no idea what it is. Not even any comprehension about what it is. So that's, we're in trouble right there because nobody has any understanding. But yeah.
Yeah, for sure. my witness testimony about AI is quite substantial over the years, and I consider myself lucky in that regard. There is, are you familiar with the Nazca alien story?
Which
the
one?
Nazca, you know, Nazca Peru, the Nazca aliens they found there.
Oh yeah, the latest I've read about that is it's a hoax. They're not real.
Okay, well, it is real. I have witnesses on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they contain breastplates that indicate that they are artificial intelligence. They're small and they're little robots basically. But there is this female called Maria, and expert remote viewers also went into that story. And I published those, my interview with them on my website, and their interviews they've done also with other people.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, Gaia TV, right? So they, you know, Jay Widener, you must know Jay, right?
Yeah.
And Jay went down there. So this is a real story. This is not a hoax. But they would probably be putting that out there because they don't want, I was told by a remote viewer that that they never want the truth about that story to get out.
Oh, I'm sure.
And the reason is because it indicates that thousands of years ago, we already had alien AI coming to this planet.
Yeah.
So you see where we are. And it's in all likelihood, our development of AI is piggybacked on alien AI that has been found here and encountered here. So that's worth being aware of. So, all right, well, let's come back to Sedona, because that's really your area of research, right? That's where you concentrated in the world. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And can you talk about your encounters with positive beings and what if anything they have told you about the future of humanity?
Well, yeah, I talk about that a lot. You know, Len Buchanan said, if you remote view into the future, you change it. So I kind of agree with that, but I can't remote view the future. All I see is chaos, just pieces.
Oh, all right.
But Pat, I can go into the past and see everything, that's as it was clearly and describe it. But if I try to go into the future, I can't do it. It's just fragments. It's probably in a flux right now, the future. So,
that may be. I am a precog. I do see the future, but I see fragments, as you say. So it's not, you know, it's not laid out, you know, in not linear. That's also time in general, right? Which is part of our perception of time is skewed. We don't understand time because we think it's linear. And and when remote viewers talk about the future, they talk in terms of events rather than actual time, because it's almost impossible to discuss time and to target a particular time. It's difficult, as you probably encountered. So, okay, so you haven't gotten, but my real question was whether you encountered extraterrestrials, whether they be human-based or humanoid or other kinds of beings, whether they ever gave you any kind of information about the future.
No. And the people that I know that have asked that questions of extraterrestrials, the extraterrestrials are real vague about it. They never, they're not specific. I've interviewed a number of people, and they beat around the bush. They don't come right to the point. But I haven't personally, no.
All right. Okay. Well, let's go back to Bradshaw Ranch for a minute, just because I'm really interested in hearing how you think, that emerged, that situation. Is there a vortex or a series of vortexes? Are you able to sense vortexes, first of all? And did you become aware of vortexes at that ranch?
There are hundreds of vortexes around Sedona. If you go back into the canyons.
Yes, we know that.
they're everywhere.
Yeah, but, well, they're advertised for tourists to go visit. So
right.
Cathedral Rock So, but I mean specifically Bradshaw Ranch, because this is where you'll have a doorway between this dimension and others. So I just was wondering, did you go there? Are you aware of where the vortexes are? That kind of thing.
Well, you know, there's Skinwalker and Bradshaw. They're so similar. And the thing is that if you read my book and Linda Bradshaw's book, a vortex on the Bradshaw Ranch. No, I've never seen, but there was a portal there. It was about 50 feet from the ranch.
Vortex is another word for portal.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. There's definitely a portal there. We could feel. Okay. Sometimes I used to joke that we felt like we were in Times Square in New York with all these things going around us. You know, Linda could really feel it, but I more than I could.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, it sounds, her book sounds a little familiar. I'm not sure. Maybe I read it in the past. I'd love to read your version of events out there. So I'll try to get a hold of your book. But can you tell us anything, like, what are some of your most earth-shaking stories that happened to you and or happened to someone that you interviewed? And I have interviewed thousands of people as well. And so I have, you know, heard a lot of stories, but I'm sure our audience would love to hear some ones that really stick out for for the listener.
Well, the weirdest thing that ever happened on the Bradshaw Ranch, Linda and I were out there one night, and they had seven dogs. If a dog wandered onto the ranch, they would just keep it. So, and the dogs in the winter, they would dig into the sand. It was all beach sand around there because the oceans have come and gone seven times here. So it was all beach sand around the ranch house. The dogs would dig into it in the winter to keep warm, in the summer to keep cool. So you had to be careful you don't trip over a dog, you know, when you were walking around. So anyway, we heard a sound one night, and we were I said, Linda, did that sound like a mountain lion or a javelina or something else? And it kept making these sounds. So we couldn't figure it out, but it was following a creek down around the side of the ranch, a dry creek. And it finally got 100 yards from us, and it roared like an African lion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, and the thing was, whatever it was big. So all the dogs jumped up simultaneously and charged it. And I said, oh boy, now we're going to get dogs getting ripped to shreds. And there was no sound. So the dogs knew it. And the dogs all, see, you know, I say this because now I can prove it, because the dogs chased it. It's not something I imagined, me and Linda imagined. So the dogs came back about 15 minutes later. They were just trotting back and dug back into the sand. And then the horses, and I've asked a lot of horse people, because I want to know, they had a corral at the bottom, at the south end of the ranch, and one at the north end of the ranch. There was about 8 horses in each. And the horses were screaming like a woman being murdered. That's what it sounded like. So this thing was getting closer to the southern corral. And the horses were trying to kick their way out. There was two by 10 boards. The corral is made of 2x10 boards. And they were trying to kick their way out. And they were screaming even more the closer this thing, because we knew it was close. But then they stopped. So Linda and I, my spotlight was still charged, but hers was dead. So we walked down as far as we could, because we thought it was in the trees near the corral, but it wasn't. It was up on the hill looking down at us. And its head was just sticking up the top of the hill looking down at us. And the thing was, whatever it was, a Bigfoot, I don't think it was a Bigfoot, but it was about 10 feet tall. And the tracks, we went up there the next day, and the tracks were 72 inches. I staked the tracks out. I had a nice photograph of them, but Linda took, yeah. So anyway, my stride is 27 inches. I'm 6'2", and this thing was 72 inches. So we had all, you know, the tracks staked out where it went by the horse corral. And it probably weighed around 1,000 pounds. That's what our guess was. Mm-hmm. So that was the scariest thing that ever happened for me and Linda on the ranch.
Well, that is amazing. Are you aware of the Anunnaki? And have you seen the Anunnaki in Sedona?
No.
Okay.
No.
I have had an encounter with Anunnaki there. Very large beings. And there, I believe there are also giants. So you could have had one of the giants come through the portal, right?
Oh, yeah, entirely possible. And the you know, Linda, there was one there, a white Bigfoot on the ranch. And it was seen by a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah.
She called it Big Girl. And so in the ensuing years, people, tourists that come down there, come out, and there's the giant handprints on the car. They dip their hands in water, and I had one. I had a woman from Canada on a tour, and I saw, she showed me the track and the handprint on her new car, and with mud, it was a perfect Bigfoot handprint. So I said, will you send me, I knew I wasn't going to get a copy of it, but I said, will you send me this so I can put it in my collection? And she says, oh, sure. I never got it, but it was a perfect handprint of a Bigfoot. So they're still there. And a number of people. And incidentally, somebody has put scientific equipment on a hill at the Bradshaw Ranch, and it's government stuff.
Right.
Very sophisticated cameras. And sun panels to charge it, and it's very expensive. And it's a guy that went back there said, this is military, and this is very expensive stuff. And one camera is aimed at the Bradshaw Ranch, and one's aimed straight up. So what are they? You know, they're looking for something, but what? You know, who? What? You know, that's the.
Well, they could be tracking incoming craft from everywhere. But I did have one secret witness tell me that. Because, you know, as I said, I lived there for, it wasn't a real long time. It was like 9 months to a year. And they said, you should never go back alone to Sedona. That's what they said to me.
Oh.
So because I guess, and there's someone who's had lots of alien encounters. So there's something going on there. And they have said that they experiment on the people that live in Sedona. That's one of the things that goes on there. And this is the military we're talking about. Although I do believe the gray aliens, certain gray aliens, will also do experiments on humans, of course. So if you encountered any grays that you understand that, typical gray that we use, there's a lot of different, as you know, you probably know, there are a lot of different versions of the grays, right? So have you seen some of those?
No, but I interviewed a guy. This is about, we're running out of time. I interviewed a guy about 15 years ago. He would Secret Canyon in Sedona was one of the most mysterious, strange, weird places on Earth. Secret Canyon. And I asked Bob Bradshaw, who'd been here since 1949. He says, I don't know where, have not no idea where that name came from. So at any rate, the guy was excuse me, the guy was stationed in front of Secret Canyon to keep people out, hikers. So he got a little angry one day. He said, I'm going to go in there and find out what the hell's going on. So he went in just a little ways. He walked around a boulder, and there's a 9-foot tall gray standing there, perfect gray, 9 feet tall. So he beat it out of there, went to a supervisor, and, you know, said a few, you know, real impolite four-letter words. And because he got fired, and then he disappeared a week later. He's never been seen again. I talked to his roommate. So somebody disappeared the guy.
Wow.
But that's the only story I know of grays.
Okay, not such a nice. Well, if you're talking about Secret Canyon, are you talking about Enchantment? Because Enchantment is canyon, and there are a lot of secrets there. Have you done some exploration in Enchantment?
Yeah, I have recently. Even it's so much stuff. It could be true, but it isn't. But the CIA guy that was on the show 2 days ago was talking about that. There is. Enchantment is a major crux of the whole thing. But, you know, there have been, back when I was very, very much into this, I called them machine gun incidents. There were many people that were, and I interviewed personally some of them. Most of the time I had to go second or third person, got stopped at gunpoint, especially Secret Canyon. These and I checked with the military. I have high-ranking military friends. And they said, "Oh yeah, those are all current military uniforms, but none of them had any patches, no insignia. They were just uniforms, and even some orange." So one colonel said, "That means there were aircraft somewhere, and they were keeping people out of all the canyons. These people ran into these machine gun people in all the canyons." So one guy. His name was Light, and I actually got to interview him. He was in Secret Canyon. He was a real backpacker kind of a guy, and he ran into three guys about halfway. Well, actually, five guys, and they had M16s. And he said, "Yeah, there's a military activities going on. We've closed the area behind because it's off limits." So the guy said, "No, this is public property. I'm going that way." And the guy stuck the M16 right in his face. He says, "You take one step and I'll pull the trigger."
Wow.
Yeah. So he wasn't joking. And I talked to an Apache. Same thing happened. He ran into six guys that had hoods on Secret Mountain. This is a full-blooded Apache. And they all had guns, and they cut little trees for him. I said, they gave him the little trees. Says, "You drag your trail, drag your tracks as far back and don't ever talk about this." So he told me. But they were all armed with machine guns, and they were obviously aliens because they had masks over their faces. They didn't want their faces to be seen, but they were human shaped. So
okay, well, what do you mean drag the trail? They wanted the Apache to go in the trail.
Yeah, because the ground is very soft on Secret Mountain. So he wanted the Apache to drag the cover up his tracks, and they watched him. It was hundreds of yards, and then they said, "Okay, you know, see you later." You know, so they made him cover his tracks. I don't know why, but you know, this they did.
That's interesting. Well, now there is, I won't keep you much longer, but I just want to ask you this one question. because I did study and I've read the books about skinwalkers as well.
Yeah.
What happened with the latest with Harry Reid, you know, the senator that wrote it? He wrote it with George Knapp.
Right.
And I forget the other author's name. It might have been Colm Kelleher.
Yeah, maybe.
But anyway, they talk about the fact that whatever they encountered at the ranch actually followed them home.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Where they lived.
It does. They do that. Oh,
so
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you encounter that kind of situation?
Yes, but I did, you know, I'm aware of them, so they don't bother me. And after a while, they leave. They get bored and they leave. But I've talked to people that have been had hellish experiences because if it came, it went with them, and yes. You know, it followed them back to wherever they were coming from. So
it's possible that's why they wanted the Apache to cover his tracks, because they want to protect him, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is, you know, really fascinating talking to you. And of course, Sedona is a fascinating place. I go there on and off, you know, through the years. Even now, I go back there a lot.
Yeah.
And always interesting encounters and various things going on. So in terms of the people that you've been interviewing, are you hearing any new trends in the abductees or the contactees? Are you hearing any new trends in what they're experiencing?
I wouldn't call it a trend, but there is a difference. It's not like it was 10 years ago.
Okay. But
how that is, I really don't know. But I got to mention that there are four bases here. I don't like to call them bases. They're underground installations. And I know where one of them is, and it's very dangerous. When he was the guy that told me about it and showed me the picture, said, "You come twice." The second time he was there, they told him, "You come back here again, we will kill you." That's a quote.
Yeah. So
I know exactly where it is, and it's extremely dangerous.
What I mean is, it close to Sedona or is it far out?
No, it's actually more closer to Flagstaff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, so I think that's going to pique the curiosity. A lot of my viewers are probably going to try to contact you and so on. So are you still leading tours of Sedona at all?
No, I get asked all the time, but I'm retired. I'm too old. I'm 78. I can't, you know.
Okay. Did you ever meet and get to know Melinda Leslie? Because she.
Oh yeah, I know well. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I often run into her when I'm in Sedona.
Yeah.
So she's a great lady, and really enjoyed knowing her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have interviewed her a few times actually.
For those
listeners out there, if you want to know. What about the To the Stars Academies people, which, you know, is Hal Pudoff and, you know, the various players? Are you familiar with them? Have they encountered you? Have they tried to interview you or anything?
Pudoff, yeah. Somebody was talking about him the other day. I really got into Ingo Swann and Russell Targ big time, but Pudoff, no.
Okay.
No.
So none of those guys really have come around you?
Not directly, no.
All right.
Yeah.
Are you interacting with some of the Native Americans in the area?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh heavily. Oh yeah, you got another 2 hours. You know, Cliff Mahudi, the Zuni elder, was my best friend. He died. They found him dead about a year ago. Cliff Mahudi, the Zuni elder. And we used to sit and talk, and he was in charge of 280 tribes because he worked for the government. And so he knew everything. So we talked a lot, and Cliff would tell me things he wouldn't tell anybody else. So yeah, the Indians, the Apaches, I have Apache friends that tell me about the extraterrestrials, the humanoids. They see them a lot, but not human. And then the Navajo, I could tell you some stories about the Navajo. The stuff that happened up there. You got another hour?
Well, we have time. I mean, do you have a story you want to share before you go with us about?
Real quick. What about the Navajo? Now this has been about 15 years ago, but the Indian Wells was pretty much the center of the Navajo reservation. They had stuff. There were three types of aliens. And these people weren't lying. They weren't making this up. They had no reason to lie about this. But there was three types of aliens they saw all the a lot, often. And one with little black guys about 2 feet tall, and they were all black. The skin was jet black. Mm. And then another one, I call them the Ichabod Crane types, and they could speak English, but they would never show their faces. And the girl, when the Navajo kids just take off. They know about snakes and the whole thing. They, and their parents don't worry about them. They're gone all day or days or whatever. And the one girl said that it was common for us to run into extraterrestrial groups just doing research, digging up plants and cutting twigs and all that. And she said one time she got too close to a she was about 5 foot eight, and she said they were the same shape as me body wise, but they had big black eyes and very gray skin, and she would always say that they're not friends, but they're not our enemies either. So anyway, she was saying she had two kids. And she was telling me the story, and just as she was telling me the good part, the kids pulled the tablecloth off the table, and all the dishes went on the floor. But she said that one of the aliens, she got too close to this group. There were about 12 of them, and they weren't human. And one of them had like a cane in his hand. It raised the cane up, and she passed out. So I was waiting. So then what happened? And then the kids pulled the napkin, tablecloth off, and all the dishes smashed. So that was the end of that interview, and I never got to see her again.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah. So they didn't want that information out there, I guess. So no. It sounds like, interesting, our pictures were frozen for the moment there. So that that's like can be some alien interference. So
yeah.
So did you go out to Indian Wells much?
I got to know him well. And Peter Gersten was the UFO lawyer. We were good friends. And Peter went up with us a couple of times. And Peter Gersten does not believe in aliens. And so there was a ship. Right there. And I said, Peter, look at that thing. Look at it. He's looking the other way. Where? What are you talking about? I don't see anything. I said, no, Peter, right there. So they had these orbs that were floating all over the place up there at Indian Wells. And And the Navajo police finally went up there. And it scared the hell out of them. They stayed, the three squad cars stayed for about 2 hours, and they scared the hell out of them. So Peter went to the courthouse, and they never filed a report, but it was just what the Indians were telling them. The aliens, the orbs, and the abductions. They got abducted a number of times. The little black guys came into a house, and they heard rustling around, and they said they hid under the covers, like a lot of people do. So they said that the light was penetrating the covers. And the next thing I knew, we were floating. We were going right through the roof of the house. And that was it. That's all I remembered. But the aliens messed with them a lot. So the Navajo police didn't want it. They had proof. The Navajos could prove it, but the Navajo police wouldn't have anything to do with it. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Last question. Have you been abducted? Are you aware of being abducted?
I get asked that all the time. I don't think so. I have strange abilities. The University of California, Berkeley, wanted me to come to Berkeley for 2 weeks. And they wanted to study me. I'm so strange. I have very strange abilities, remote viewing. I can see into a human body like an X-ray machine. I've done it on hundreds of people, even medical doctors. So they wanted to study me for 2 weeks, and I was sponsored by one of the professors, and I turned them down. I found out they wanted to hypnotize me for 2 weeks because it was all about extraterrestrials, and I'm glad I turned them down.
Okay. I could be peppering you with questions for the next 5 hours, but I won't do that. I want to conserve your energy for you there a little, and I'm sure that this is enough for the audience to get some interest. And so where can people buy your books?
Well, Amazon now. Most of my books are going out of print because my publisher is 88 years old, and she's going to retire and close. So the only book that's been reprinted, it'll never be out of print because it's a bestseller, it's Merging Dimensions.
Okay.
But all my other books are going out of print or are out of print already. So I may go to Amazon and have them reprinted, but Amazon, all my books are still on Amazon. That's the only place.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Good to know. Great. Yeah. So, Tom, it's great to reconnect with you. I'd love to have you back on the show after you've done your television special, because you say you've got this filming going on.
Yeah.
And a show that's coming out soon.
It's gonna be June 6th. I'm probably okay to talking about this. June 6th at 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, all right, great.
History Channel.
Uh huh. Well, all right, fascinating. All right. Well, I guess I'll let you go. I guess one thing I would like to know: are you aware of this Project Bluebeam, the plan to have a fake alien invasion?
Yeah.
Obviously, the aliens are already here, but
yeah,
you know, we've heard a lot about that over the years. What's your position on that?
I don't think it would work now because too many people are aware.
Yes.
And it wouldn't, they want to take people by surprise and scare the hell out of them. And I don't think it would work now. So I don't think they're going to do it.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like I said, thank you again for being on the show, and let's do this again in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Take care, everyone. And I've got lots more things going on. I'm busy all week with interviews and whatnot. So please stay tuned. Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye.